Hey, what's up? Welcome to In the Thick. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Imara Jones. This is In the Thick Sound Off.
Yes, Imara, it is. And you are here because my usual co-anchor, the fabulous Julio Ricardo Varela, is on vacation with his family.
Where?
Who knows? No clue. But you and I get to hang out.
Absolutely.
So, Imara, there's a lot going on in the whole wide world.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about domestic issues in a second,
another
day, right? But, you know, a lot of us have been really worried about what's happening in terms of Venezuela, just in terms of people's safety. Just a quick update. So the opposition leader, Juan Guaido, basically called for what he named Operación Libertad, which was this call to kind of have the armed forces stand up and overthrow Maduro. And this is what he had to say.
El cese definitivo de la usurpación empezó hoy. Contamos con el pueblo de Venezuela. Hoy las Fuerzas Armadas claramente están del lado del pueblo, están del lado de la Constitución, leales a la Constitución, leales al pueblo de Venezuela, a su familia, al futuro, al progreso. Han sido años de sacrificio.
And, you know, so that happened in the morning. Like, the Venezuelans woke up and they got this message from Juan Guaido, basically, tírense a la calle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there has been, from the part of the United States, I don't know what you think of him, Imara, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, but he did lead the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what he said. He said Nicolás Maduro had an airplane on the tarmac and was ready to leave for exile in Cuba. I don't think that's been independently confirmed. Both Russia and Venezuela have denied that. Imara, so what have you been kind of processing as you're watching what's happening in Venezuela?
I mean, everything seems to be coordinated, right? So the release of this dossier and Guaido saying, you know, get yourselves into the streets. The fact that Pompeo is saying that they were ready to go and also saying that the United States might be ready for military action. So it all seems to be coordinated, right? There seems to be
perfect
collusion.
Timing, right. there does, though.
There seems to be collusion if you just look at the events, right, as they stack up. And that's interesting because it is not a hard intervention, but it certainly is a soft intervention. And I think as we spoke about last time when I actually guest hosted on Venezuela, plug for the last
show, yes,
exactly,
yes,
is that it could easily be a slippery slope, very slippery slope in terms of the United States getting involved, even inadvertently, in a way that is much more direct. And they clearly have itching for a scratch.
I don't know if you can read my chicken scratch here.
No.
But I'm just playing off of your itching for a scratch. And mm-hmm. I'm like, my chicken scratch on my note says, mm-hmm. war presidents win. So if Trump ends up deciding to be interventionist, even though he said that that's not, but again, we can't believe anything that he has said.
Yeah.
Right. We have to keep that in mind. War presidents win. Now, you brought up this dossier and some people were like, wait, what dossier? It's a secret dossier that was leaked to the New York Times. It's compiled by Venezuelan intelligence agents. And the core of this document was that it exposes that one of the most powerful Venezuelan government leaders, a former vice president, he is now Maduro's industry minister, Tarek Al-Alsami. And the dossier basically is saying that he helped sneak Hezbollah militants into Venezuela, that there is a relationship with drug trafficking. So the theory goes that if there are intelligence officers someplace that are prepared to leak this document with this information about Tarek Al-Alsami, then that means that maybe there are people who are prepared to do more. It just raises interesting questions about the role of journalism and journalists and the New York Times. And the way the New York Times played it in the Daily is kind of like, well, you know, and then they're leaking it to us, the New York Times, because they know that we're going to put it all over the world. And Imara, then it's just like, wait, what's going on? I suddenly felt really uncomfortable in terms of, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but to me, there was a moment where it was like, what is the role of the New York Times in all of this and being used?
Yeah, and also this amorphous they, right?
Right.
Who's the they? It reminds me of this conversation, since I'm also extremely obsessed with Game of Thrones, where one of the main—
I know nothing, okay? I haven't watched yet, but I know everybody's dying.
Everybody's dying over it. But one of the main characters, like 4 seasons ago, got jailed, for everyone who listens, Tyrion, when he was jailed. And he was talking about the people that put him in jail. And he said, the they. And then his brother goes, well, who's the they? And he goes, I don't know. They, the people pulling all the strings, right?
Yeah.
And so it reminds me of the same thing. So who's the they that leaked the dossier? That's very
totally.
Amorphous. And it could have come from any number of places. It didn't necessarily have, you know, it didn't necessarily have to come directly from Venezuela. And it just all underscores the fact that, again, that there seems to be some coordination, some collusion between Guaido and the American authorities. And that's different from just support, right? And it's not working so far, by the way.
Exactly. Well, that's the other thing, is that there wasn't an uprising.
Whatever rabbits they keep, you know, whatever they keep doing fizzles out.
It's something which is also scary in and of itself, because for all kinds of reasons. Venezuela, very complicated. We'll keep on talking about it. But before we go on to our next topic, we have to talk about Honduras. So basically what we know is that there's kind of like a news blackout in terms of mainstream, right? Mm. Like, people are talking about this on social media. I had a colleague at the University of DePaul come and speak to me. Basically, there was attempts to privatize healthcare and education. And there was like a strike, a massive strike, violence. And immediately I just think to the same thing that can happen with Venezuela, which is, this is how people become refugees.
Mm-hmm.
Because things are happening. Countries are being rocked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because it's hard for people to be able to contextualize what's actually happening. They just see Americans, in quotes, see people arriving at the border without context. And the context is the tremendous amount of destabilization in Central America that in many ways is coming from a confluence of forces, many of which we've had a hand in helping to orchestrate.
I would say, right? That's a hand.
I'm being very...
I would be two hands, both feet, the head, the legs. Like, the entire United States has been up in Central America since 100 years, at a minimum, we know.
At a minimum.
At a minimum, we know, like, for sure. But just to give people context, and it's like everybody forgets.
This is a really crazy fact. So one of the things I learned in doing research for another thing is how on the eve of the Civil War in the 1860s, there was a desire by Southern senators to invade both Cuba and Nicaragua to expand slavery and to give the United States an excuse for war, so that there wouldn't be a civil war. And so this obsession actually goes way before then, this desire to intervene, this desire to have Central America be, you know, on the string. And so, look, we know that the gang problem has American origins. We know that the drug problem has American origins. We know the United States has disproportionately contributed to climate change and won't take responsibility, which is contributing to problems in Central America. We know the United States has a long history of intervention in Central America, direct military intervention, even recently. So, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And so the surprise, right, is why haven't even more people left? Right. Mm. If you look at the entire history of destabilization, it's not a wonder that we have so many people showing up on our border, because it's our issue. Let's go to our second topic. Now, back to domestic politics. This Wednesday, Attorney General William Barr came to the Capitol to testify about his handling of the Mueller report in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And it was a shit show, with Senator Lindsey Graham, chairman of the committee, mm-mm, incorrectly saying that Mueller had asked Barr to make a conclusion about whether or not Trump had obstructed justice. But
yeah,
more important than that, we saw the attorney general drowning in, not surprisingly, mediocre explanations, like what we saw in this exchange with Senator Kamala Harris.
Has the president or anyone at the White House ever asked or suggested that you open an investigation of anyone?
I wouldn't.
Yes or no?
Could you repeat that question?
I will repeat it.
Yeah.
Has the president or anyone at the White House ever asked or suggested that you open an investigation of anyone? Yes or no, please, sir.
The president or anybody else.
Seems you would remember something like that and be able to tell us.
Yeah, but I'm trying to grapple with the word suggest. I mean, there have been discussions of matters out there that they have not asked me to open an investigation, but
perhaps they've suggested.
I don't know. I wouldn't say suggest.
Hinted.
I don't know.
Inferred.
Yeah. Well, Barr was supposed to testify in front of the House Committee on Thursday, but not surprisingly, after that experience and exchange, he declined to do so because the chairman of that committee, Gerald Nadler, insisted on having staff lawyers do part of the questioning.
And then there was the chicken.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the,
someone
and the
ate
fried
Kentucky
chicken.
Fried Chicken and put a chicken where his chair was supposed to, where his chair was, rather. I mean, where do you think this leaves us in this entire Mueller investigation? And what do you think is the strategy behind what Barr did?
I guess, you know, what we are seeing, I'm still trying to process this. The fact that you have an attorney general who we know now lied, straight up lied. And how do we know that? Because there is this letter that Mueller wrote to Barr where he basically said, yo, and by the way, I thought it was very tame in many ways. If I was Mueller, I'd be a little bit more upset. But I guess for Mueller, this is the way he gets upset.
Correct.
Like super controlled.
He's like literally 1930s G-man,
right out of it. So he was like, excuse me, I'm not happy with the way you portrayed this. And it's not good for the American public. We were supposed to be building trust. So like that.
Right.
And Barr saw that letter. And then when he was asked about it, straight up. So, like, did you know if Mueller was okay with, like, the way you interpret it? And Barr was like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, he said, I don't know why he was upset. And then Senator Leahy asked him about it yesterday, and he said, oh, well, he obfuscated the lie, which is, I guess, what you would do if you were lying. I mean, I think it's so clear why Barr fought to have the job and why Trump wanted him in the job. He's doing the thing, right? He's making himself the issue and not the Mueller report and not the underlying charges.
True,
and he's willing to take that hit, you know?
Why? Why? Why is William Barr? That, I think, is a big question. I mean, this morning on MSNBC, actually, they were asking that question. You know, I think that is the question. And part of the other thing that happened is that there was the whole setup from the mainstream media to expect Barr to be the elder statesman, kind of like Mueller. And it was like, why were you even?
No. I mean, I think that the interesting thing about it is he is doing and he's acting in the attorney general's job, and he has the president that he thinks we should have. That is to say, not necessarily Trump himself, but he has long believed in an unbridled presidency in which everything is subordinate to the president. And he spent his entire career through his various legal memos and everything that he's done fighting for that. And so I think that there's something inside of him that he's like, I'm in my 70s. This is probably my last job.
Huh.
This is the thing I really have believed in my whole career. So he's going to go take that hit.
Okay, we're going to move on to our final topic. And again, Imara, we have to talk about immigration because while there are shiny, bright objects happening in terms of Barr over here, William Barr over there, where it's not so shiny, issued an order that directs immigration judges to deny some migrants a chance to post bail, basically indefinite detention, i.e. ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching for private prison industry. This follows the attempt of President Trump to end what he calls, I hate this thing, quote, catch and release. It's an actual term that they use of policy as if we were fish, basically saying that now they want to hold on or fast track people who are applying for refugee status. Like you don't get to appeal. Like if you're turned down, it's over. And also, this insane thing, you saw this about charging money for people who are coming to seek asylum. It's insane, Imara.
I mean, again, it's what I've said for a really long time, that a government that's willing to put toddlers in cages is capable of anything. And so I'm not surprised by anything. I literally am not surprised by anything. Just the depth of the depravity is so profound that it's hard to be surprised anymore. So, you know, if I'm going to put a toddler in a cage, well, why wouldn't I do something crazy and like charge people to file for asylum? Or why wouldn't I? There's no limit.
Correct.
There's absolutely no limit. I think the worrying thing is the militarization of the border, right? The fact that they're talking about calling up more troops, the fact that there are all these vigilante groups that are mobilizing themselves, that now they have a clarion call, apparently on AM radio. It's all the rage of people being
called up to come to the border.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah. And like, it's okay if you want to go to the border. We have to stop this. Our president, da 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 da. So I think that the worry is that at some point over the summer, because there's usually a mass increase in migration over the summer for obvious reasons, that there could be an incident, you know, a mass death incident on the border. Mm. I mean, that's where this is headed.
And so the sad news, right, that a 16-year-old boy, this boy was the third migrant to die in the last 5 months while being held in U.S. government custody for doing nothing. Okay, like just, I mean, they have done nothing wrong, and three children have died at the hands and in custody of the U.S. government. This young man was 16 years old. He was from Guatemala. And then there's this horrific news that on Wednesday night, a 10-month-old boy died after a raft carrying migrants overturned in the Rio Grande along the Texas border. Three other migrants, two of which are children, who are missing still. And they are feared dead because of that accident. There's something really horrible, Amara. I have this feeling like people want to keep on watching like these human drama films. You know, it's just like, but it's happening right now. Like there is a mother who lost her 10-month. I mean, I had a little 10-month-old. And that woman is going to be permanently scarred. And it's like, ah. It's a lot to handle. So when you say, but I worry when you say you're not surprised. I swear to you, that worries me because how do we manage that, right? It's becoming so normalized.
Yeah, I don't think that I'm not surprised because it's still shocking, right? And it's still abhorrent. So I don't lose any of those other emotions, but I'm saying that once I saw them willing to go there, there's very, very, very little that surprises me. When it comes to the immigration policy of this administration or other policies. I mean, the fact that after a woman was murdered by white supremacists, you know, and a mob, that the president was like, oh, well, you know, whatever.
Good people.
Yeah, good people,
people
on both sides. And so that's what I'm saying. And I think that, like, one of the things I think is a problem is that we're not prepared. We're not engaged with the amount of urgency that we need to be because we don't understand how far we've gone. Do you understand what I mean? And every time one of these things happen, we want to be like, oh my God, I can't believe that this happens. But no, that's where we are. So we need to be urgent and act with urgency.
So Amara, before we end today's show, I just want to ask you this, like, what's one thing, because this was a little bit of a downer. So what's one thing that's making you happy right now?
Well, my birthday is next week.
Okay.
But besides that, it's Pride Month next week. It's going to be super fun.
All right.
It's the 50th anniversary of Stonewall. There's a lot to be frightened of with this administration, but there's a lot to celebrate. And I think it's going to be super fun. And that's just 3 weeks away.
Okay. I'm looking forward to that. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Amara Jones.
Uno, dos, tres.
And remember, dear listener, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us because it really helps. Also, come on, kudos to Amara for sitting in for her second time as a guest host. Also, you can also listen to In the Thick Now on Pandora and on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook. Tell everyone you know to listen, please. In the Thick is produced by Juan Pablo Garnham and Nicole Rothwell. Our audio engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Noor Saudi. The music that you heard is courtesy of Nacional Kept and ZZK Records. We will see you on our next episode. Thank you so much for listening. Ciao.
Ciao.
Adios.
Adios.
The travel woes, just like being, you know, it took forever. And then I was explaining that I made a very bad health decision in terms of
that?
Food. Yes.
Tuna?
No.
McDonald's?
Oh, thank you, Nicole. So I ate McDonald's, but you know what? It turned out to be the smartest thing because because I stayed full for the entire 7 hour.
Oh my God.
Trauma. I was full when I went to sleep.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.